And so they're able to actually turn a search term like bowel reform and even a geography that they're looking to go into and turn that into mailing addresses of nonprofits. And so that's something that you couldn't really do within a Twitter search or within a Facebook search, because once you go into those platforms and start searching, you're going to see every fake news account, every bot, every crazy uncle, and you're going to have to filter through all these groups. And when you go into Torch, there's just needles and no haystack.
Hello, this is the Great Battlefield Podcast. I'm Nathaniel G. Perlman. A great political battle is being fought right now between progressives and the forces of reaction on the other side. This show is about the political entrepreneurs and other progressive leaders who are finding new or improved ways to fight. In this episode, I talk to Rick and Mike, the two co-founders of Torch, an intelligence and communications platform for mission-driven organizations. Torch aggregates social data in the nonprofit and political world and provides tools for organizations to search that data and use it to strengthen their fundraising, communications, and advocacy. It struck me as a platform with a lot of potential. Rick Greenberg is an experienced social entrepreneur and leader, and Mike Seiler is a technical co-founder with a strong history of engineering in the internet industry. Mike and Rick join me in my home office to talk about Torch, their entrepreneurial journey, and the issues and challenges in creating an enterprise to help mission-driven organizations, including how to decide what clients they might seek or turn away. So with that as background, a quick word with our sponsor, then a good conversation with Rick and Mike from Torch.
Check out the large, detailed, and high-quality political data graphic posters from Timeplots. Our visual history of the American presidency, for example, lets you see the Clinton, Bush, Obama, and Trump presidencies in full context. Timeplots library includes visual histories of the United States House, the United States Senate, the Supreme Court, and the Democratic and Republican parties. Find them all at www.timeplots.com. Use the code BATTLEFIELD for a discount.
Hi, Mike and Rick. Which is which?
I'm Rick.
And I'm Mike. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
Would you each mind giving me quick biographies?
This is Rick and Rick Greenberg. My background is in nonprofit and philanthropy. I've been working in the what I call the social sector for the last 20, almost 25 years at a range of nonprofits, mostly advocacy groups, so building campaigns, building political power. I think maybe one of my proudest campaigns was something called the Second Chance Campaign, which reforms state laws that make it difficult for people to reintegrate into society after incarceration. So barriers to employment, barriers to public assistance, to voting, all these things that are difficult legally if you have a criminal record. I've also been a fundraiser. My first job in the nonprofit sector when I was 25 was because I was looking for a job that had good health benefits, and I found a job with Matilda Cuomo, who is Mario Cuomo's wife, former First Lady of New York, and she made me a fundraiser. She thought I talked a good game, so she was like, I call her the Italian grandmother I never had, Matilda Cuomo, and did a lot of corporate fundraising. And then I've also been a grant maker. I was the president of a foundation called the Fund for New Jersey that awards mostly advocacy grants. Yeah, I have been involved in politics a bit. I worked on the first Obama campaign from 06 to 08. I was on his National Criminal Justice Policy Committee with Eric Holder and others. I am also the lowest level elected official possible, I think, in the Democratic Party. I'm a district leader in Maplewood, New Jersey, in Essex County, where I live. I was elected last year to be a district leader for the Democratic Party.
Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Maybe that's just the beginning of a climb up the ladder. Maybe.
I'm happy with grassroots, my 20 block spot where I knock doors with my daughter and get the vote out. And yep.
Nice.
Cool. Why don't you now go?
Thanks. Thanks. My name's Mike Seiler, and my title at Torch is co-founder and CTO. My background and experience is less in politics and more in technology. I went to college and studied applied engineering physics, which not a lot of people study, and finished my undergrad and master's at Cornell in 4 years, and did a lot of computational physics. While I was in college, I got really drawn into that, and my broader interest was in the physics of medical devices. And following that passion, I did my master's project on computational fluid dynamics and specifically microfluidics. And through that process, really enjoyed learning about software development. And this was around 2008. And right as I was graduating, I had a shoulder snowboarding injury.
Ouch.
And so instead of getting a job in 2008, which was sort of the worst economy at the time for entry level, I spent 6 months or so recovering from a shoulder reconstruction. And in the process, taught myself web development and learned how to build websites. And my first kind of self-learning project was building a combination of iTunes in the web browser using the YouTube API. And through that process, learned what JavaScript was, learned what a database was, learned how to search things, and leveraged that fun project into a strong job interview portfolio. After building a few different websites and projects, I was hired as the first engineer, the first software developer at a company that originally was called Project Optimize, and now it's called Oracle Data Cloud Moat Analytics. And so for about 7 years there, depending on how you count, I helped grow a company that measures, when I was there, over 20 billion ad sessions a day and has a lot of anti-fraud and insightful analytics into, we like to say that we measured attention at Moat.
Can you tell me why it was called Moat?
Absolutely. And the founders love this story. It's a reference to an economic term that Warren Buffett likes talking about. And if you look at Disney's, the example that always came up, and the conversation was, if you're at, well, this was dating it, but if you're at Blockbuster Video and you want to rent a video for your kids and you want to keep them entertained, do you want the Disney movie for the kids or this other thing you've never heard of?
Right.
And so the brand around Disney is called its Moat. So we built ad analytics tools for, and specifically for, large brands.
I'm kind of curious about the motivation there in going to Moat, because here you are, someone obviously very smart academically, moving through a master's in 4 years, mm-hmm. and kind of passionate about computational physics applied to health devices, and suddenly you're in a commercial area. Did you feel at home with that? Were you happy just with the technical problems, or was there something in you that was looking for something more societally beneficial or something like that ever?
Yeah, I feel like most people that get into online advertising and marketing aren't coming into it with the idea that they're changing the world necessarily. There were some great moments at Moat where we'd get feedback from sales team, the account management team, about client success stories, and Moat powers ad analytics, brand ad analytics for the New York Times. So one story I always remember is a salesperson getting feedback from people at the New York Times, and there was a woman who says, I love Moat. I used to kind of hate my job because I'd be pitching these brands on buying more and more ad space at the New York Times, and they'd spend maybe $1 million, a quarter on ad space, and I'd have to show them you got 5,000 clicks on your ad. Don't you want to spend another $1 million? And what we built at Moat was a top of the funnel down analytics platform that would tell you how many people actually had your ad in view on the screen, how long it was on the screen for. And sort of most interestingly, we built a export platform. So you could go in and say, okay, we're meeting with, say, Tiffany & Co. Let's export all their ad analytics. And so that was cool to know that the New York Times, the bastion of the Fourth Estate, very well venerated and respected newspaper, is using our platform to increase their revenue and their cash flow, which gives them the economic ability to keep doing what they're doing. So that part was cool. And then finding that motivation, finding that value, that touchstone is part of why I'm so excited about Torch.
I thought that might be the case. Mm-hmm. Rick, can you tell me what is the founding story for Torch? Like where did that come from and how did you guys get together on that?
Sure. The first time that Mike and I met face-to-face was on Valentine's Day, 2016.
That's very sweet.
So there's some business significance, in that, in addition to me having dinner with my wife that night to celebrate Valentine's Day. Mike and I got together that day, and the way we connected was through our college networks. We both went to Cornell University, different generations. I'm a little older than Mike. I never met him. I'd founded a benefit corporation previously to Torch called Amplify. And Amplify was a mission-driven for-profit company that ran mostly digital campaigns for foundations, big causes. And I'm not a technical person. I know politics and advocacy and philanthropy, but I had this sort of inkling. You know, we're building campaign after campaign. Each one's different. It's a lot of work. There's scaling problems. We get more business. We have more work. And we're also not reaching like more people, more nonprofits. So you know, the missing link was technology in terms of getting to more groups. And so the timing was perfect when a friend of ours, a mutual acquaintance, who said to me, you know, I just met this brilliant technologist who seems really smart, super motivated, and it seems like he's going to be vesting out of this ad tech company that he was the first engineering hire on. Maybe you guys should meet because you keep saying you want to build a tech tool for social good, but you don't know the first thing about coding and here's this guy. So that was the founding story. That's how Mike and I met and we had a coffee and talked about things. We were sort of off to the races from there.
Well, what was the vision that you were conveying in that meeting?
Sure. So, yeah, it's a great question. So my vision was being a non-technical person. My vision was like kind of big picture and a little mushy, I think. Originally I was like, hey, Mike, it's great to meet you. I would love to build like a social network for good, right?
That's, by the way, been tried so many times.
I know.
It always dies.
That's what Mike said, essentially.
Yeah.
So Mike's reaction, he's a great partner and he listened and he started to see the social network for good. It's like I saw the movie and I wanted to do something like that. And Mike, you know, listened and then paused and said, well, maybe what we want to do, and I noticed immediately he started using the we word, which was exciting, even though we'd met like 20 minutes earlier. He was like, maybe we want to build some scaffolding, some infrastructure digitally using social media for the nonprofit sector, and sort of like move me away from my fixation on the social network. And that's what we've done with Torch. We've built scaffolding that allows the nonprofit sector, the social sector, to do lots of different things.
I was thinking, in a way, okay, let's in our minds imagine that we build this platform and we manage to get every socially conscious person, an organization, and CSR group and company on this platform, and they're all posting. What's the next step? How do we build a business out of that? Where do we take that? Where do we find the key core of the value? And to me, a big missing link and a big part of why we built Torch and the value that our customers get and that actually anyone who visits our website, torch1.com, can get out of a new platform we just launched called Torch Lite, which is a free and light version of our search tool, is that you can search what we call the universe of mission-driven content. So thinking through this idea that Rick came to me about, and I was in a good mood, I was optimistic, wanted to start something new, and as you were saying earlier, wanted to find some meaning in what I'm doing. So it's like, what do you do when you have all of this great communications from activists, from nonprofits, from elected officials at your fingertips? And so the thought was, let's bring all that into our platform using the Twitter API, the Facebook API, the YouTube API, et cetera. And then let's act as if this is our social network. And now let's build an offering and a product and a platform around coalition building, around searching for scans, location scans, and build the tooling that you'd want to build on the back end, on the premium version of this site that we hadn't yet built. So I took the spirit of Rick's vision and kind of brought it forward and maybe skipped a step of actually having it be a social network that organizations post to, and took advantage of the fact that the NAACP, the ACLU, they're already putting out this great content on social, on their websites, in their email blasts, and thought, what's the now what? What's the, what do we do with it then? And so that was the motivation around Torch.
How close is what you ended up building to what you presented to him in that first conversation?
It took us months to narrow in on that. There was a moment where for me it clicked, and we were had an idea around let's build the scaffolding, let's start building this basic framework where you can make an account, claim a nonprofit organization, and start posting under that organization. Where we're eating lunch, we're hanging out in our co-working space, and Rick takes his phone out and says, oh, look, I just got an email from Michelle Obama. And he's joking because he's on a mailing list with 100 million other folks. But there was this moment in my mind, which is, I'm an outsider to politics, philanthropy, advocacy, and I want to get my hands around the space. I want to know what's happening. I want to search it. I want to learn from it. I want to know what organizations, what individuals, what groups are talking about school lunch, or talking about childhood nutrition. And here's this email coming out from a very famous person, maybe half the people listening have read her book, Becoming. And here's an email that's going out. And if you're not already on that mailing list, it's gone. You're not going to see it. You're not going to know about it. And if you are on that mailing list, it's going to the third inbox in your Gmail filters. Maybe it's going straight to spam. And you're not going to see it. So there's whatever, the dark web, the deep web, all these things that refer to non-Googleable parts of the internet. And here's this valuable resource that Rick is joking about, that he's important to be on this list, that's basically going right into the trash. We're looking at all these social media feeds from all these nonprofits. And for me, that was the moment where it clicked, which is, let's pull that together, make it searchable, and there's value there. There's an idea there.
I'm starting to grasp what it is. Rick, how did you make decisions about what to capture into this essentially a database and what not to?
Sure. So what we wanted to capture, this scaffolding, this database, which became this mythic scaffolding that we created, that we built from scratch, and we now have a patent pending on, and all these great things, is essentially, just to take a step back, is a real-time directory of the mission-driven world, of the social sector. We think, you know, I joke sometimes younger people don't get it, but there's like no yellow pages for nonprofits and advocacy. There's no giant place that you can search, whether it's paper or digital, if you want to find out who's saying what about animal rights. Like if you type in animal welfare or any issue into Google, like Mike is saying, you'll get secondary sources mostly. What we built, this database that's now 2 million plus, the way we decided what goes in, we decided to sort of be a force for verified information. you know, versus like misinformation or what's that? Or is that a crazy uncle? Or is that a bot? Or so we went to the 990 tax forms. Every nonprofit, 501c3s, C4s, and others have to file public tax forms. We were able to pull in, what, 1.4 million?
1.7 million.
And match essentially paper from the IRS to social handles and URLs, and then pull all of that into our database.
But right? Some of those organizations are good ones and some of them are not good ones, right?
Sure, but in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. Like we still think that our...
So you're claiming to be a one-eyed man?
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes I am. But the fact that these are IRS certified organizations, they're nonprofits, we think that elevates what they're saying, the substance of what they're saying. And it's also an industry, right? It's the nonprofit industry. There's a new stat out that more people work at nonprofits in the US than in manufacturing. We believe that the nonprofit community as a whole are trusted and generally doing good work. So we decided to pull in all of them and make, you know, their individual social media accounts searchable by keyword and geography. And then we've also added in as many elected officials as we can get, their social media feeds from
both parties.
Both parties, yeah. Torch is completely nonpartisan. We have the left, the right, and everybody in between. And then also, we now have board members. So we have electeds, nonprofits, and then over 100,000 individuals that serve on boards, nonprofit boards, I should say. So that, we think, is a really cool proxy for people that are donors, of course, that are activists, and having their social media feeds searchable, also by keyword and geography.
And also, what I think is really important about this list focusing on nonprofits is that, as you said, they're good ones and maybe less good ones. They're still run by people and they're still have an official nexus in the United States and go through a vetting process driven by the IRS. And when you compare that to the Twitter eggs, or you compare that to foreign disinformation campaigns, we feel confident that the information that we're portraying on Torch, even if it's one of the bad ones, is still a group in the United States that's acting and is intentional and has a human or organization of humans behind it.
And you organize this as a for-profit business, right?
Correct.
So what is the business? Like, who wants to subscribe to the service that you're providing?
So yeah, it's a subscription business. We have a free version now available, but our clients to date have been nonprofits that want to use our database to benchmark their messaging to other nonprofits, build coalitions, look at what foundations are saying, be current on their issue areas. That includes advocacy and direct service. That also includes grant-making foundations who want to monitor their grantees in real time. And then we're also working with some corporations, CSR, corporate social responsibility groups, and as well as elected officials now. We're getting involved with some campaigns who want a better dashboard for what's going on in real time in their districts.
And we're also working with foundations, so funders of nonprofits, and they can find organizations to support. They can do benchmarking, use it for their own comms. And we're also starting to work with universities. And we've had a university in New York City that's been a paid user and is bringing our platform into the classroom. And we're also working with some student groups on campus that are politically minded that want to use this to amplify their own voice.
So talk about the first client, say, sure. or one of the first clients, and precisely what they're doing and what they can do. Because
So one of our earliest clients was a think tank in New York City that's publishing white papers, reports on criminal justice reform. Mm-hmm. They have their list of, they think they know who cares about the issue.
Yeah.
They or we generate reports that say, here are all the groups across the country that are talking about bail reform or parole or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we rank by influence, give their contact information so they're able to bring them on, add to their distribution lists in terms of getting, you know, getting their reports out and also just bringing new voices into the conversation. So I didn't know this group cared about bail reform.
So like I could create a list on Twitter or something, which would give me the feeds of all the groups that were in a particular area like mm-hmm. that.
Correct.
But this has the advantage of not just being Twitter, mm-hmm. including groups that I don't know about, mm-hmm. perhaps, mm-hmm. right? I'm sure I would find them by Twitter searches of my own over time, right? What is the advantage of your search interface mm-hmm. over ones that exist already?
For that think tank, a problem that they had that they came to us to help with is distribution of their white papers and their reports. And something interesting that they said to us was that they want to actually mail physical copies of their report to other think tanks and to other activist groups and to other foundations. And so within Torch, you can go in and type keywords related to the white paper that you're publishing, bail reform and this and that, and then build what we call within Torch a watch list or a channel focused on these groups. And then from there, because we have this social media data linked with the IRS tax 990s, we have mailing addresses, we have names of the executive boards, and so they're able to actually turn a search term like bail reform and even a geography that they're looking to go into and turn that into mailing addresses of nonprofits. And so that's something that you couldn't really do within a Twitter search or within a Facebook search, because once you go into those platforms and start searching, you're going to see every fake news account, every bot, every mm-hmm. crazy uncle, and you're going to have to filter through all these groups. And when you go into Torch, there's just needles and no haystack.
Who do you compete with? Who else is doing something like this?
So our competition is generally social listening tools. It's a big industry now, social intelligence, social listening, social monitoring. What's different about Torch versus other big social listening tools is that ours is the universe of what we call relevant chatter, relevant to the social sector, to nonprofit, politics, advocacy, philanthropy, because we have this invention, which is the database that we've built from scratch. So we're filtering, Mike often likes to say, it's some kind of techie term, you know, garbage in, garbage out. So when you do a Torch search versus a search on a big global social listening tool or even Google, you are getting your most relevant stakeholders. So if you're a nonprofit and you care about poverty in cities and you do a Torch search, what it's searching in real time are the conversations around poverty in cities coming only from what we believe to be your most relevant stakeholders, which are your peers, your funders, your elected officials, and board members. So the results that pop up are immediately actionable to doing what you need to do as a nonprofit or an elected official, which is essentially raise money, build power, build coalitions, build your visibility. So we don't feel like we have any direct competitors in social intelligence yet, right? Social intelligence specifically focused. Yes. Right, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
And building on that, part of what we've built and why it's unique and why it's great if you're in the space in social activism is when you go to Facebook or Twitter and there's all these techniques that those platforms use to bring you on and mm-hmm. keep you engaged in the platform. And part of that is their recommendation engine. And they'll say, oh, you're John and you know Mary, so you probably know Sam. And so what Facebook does is they think of everyone in the world on their platform as this complicated, interconnected social graph. And so what we've done is anchored the way that we think of social media across Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, email blasts as a social graph, where we say to it that the important groups are the elected officials and the nonprofits and the board members. So we anchor the search that you're doing focused on that. So far, there haven't been any competitors that have stepped up and says the 12% of the U.S. workforce that works at a nonprofit is important enough to warrant its own custom and specialized social media intelligence platform. And that's what we've done. And so we do find ourselves being compared to other tools and platforms that are focused on fundraising for nonprofits, fundraising for political and advocacy campaigns. And also there are other social media search tools. And what they do, though, is just say, you can type in this keyword and we'll search all of social media. And we've since added support for that, for adding and searching so far just specifically across Twitter, across the whole platform. But we do base what we provide and the search results that we provide on the social graph of social advocates.
So two groups that I'm a little aware of, but not really as a user, are Attentively and CrowdTangle. Are you familiar with them? And can you distinguish what you've got from what they can do?
CrowdTangle, I'm a little familiar with, Attentively as well. And from what I understand, they're not searching off a database of this universe of relevant chatter, right? So I'm going to share a couple examples. So I mentioned that think tank that said, we published a report on X issue. We have our list, but we know there's a lot more people that care about criminal justice. On other sort of global social listening groups, you're not able to zero in to that level of interest. So, and find allies or find people that are going to promote you. An example that comes to mind when we knew we were onto something, or that Verified, you know, because when you start a company, it's like, I think most people, if you're a little humble, you're like, this is crazy. What am I doing? Like you have the faker syndrome, you know, and like you feel, or the fraud, like the
imposter.
Imposter syndrome. When we definitely had the imposter syndrome early on, Torch looked, I think the interface looks cool now. It's really intuitive. It's easy to use. But early on, I call it was like a homework project that Mike like made. The Torch, the view was like blue.
User designed by programmer.
Yeah, exactly. It was like, all I remember is that it was.
I've done that.
I think I've repressed it, Nathaniel, what it looked like, but it was like blue. I remember it was blue.
It probably worked better than it does now.
It was a user, it was defined by whatever low price template that we bought.
And we certainly didn't have a UX designer or UI designer. Anyway.
That we do now.
So at that point, but we did have the database. We had the scaffolding that we had built, and we had the chief of staff to a member of Congress looking at it, or not looking at it. This is somebody I used to work with in advocacy, and he's been in it forever, and a really important kind of first trial. And Mike, because he's like fearless, was like, well, let's just show James what it is. I was like, no, let's not. Let's just talk about mockups. And so we decided to show it to him and actually use it. And I think it was probably the first time that we both felt like, okay, we may have like, you know, lightning in a jar or something. And we said, well, what are you working on, James, with the member of Congress? And he said, I'm working on two things, a gun safety campaign and a campaign to outlaw private prisons at the federal level.
Yep.
And it's all about, you know.
Sounds like a Democrat.
Yeah, a Democrat. It is a Democrat. Who's with you?
Yeah.
Who's against you? And how do you make the column of who's with you bigger than the one who's against you? We typed in on the gun safety one. Well, Mike, you tell this story. I think it's good. And I'll pick up the private prisons one because did this. You typed into the homework project that became Torch.
Yeah, I typed in guns, limited it to New Jersey, gun violence, et cetera. And all over the feed in Torch were the New Jersey Nursing Union. And they're posting memes and posting well-created photos with text on it that says, we're nurses and we're exhausted, frustrated, and tired of having to work tirelessly in the ER. Here I'm adding a little color to it, but putting our thumbs in all these gunshot wounds, and because politicians can't get their act together and create any sort of reasonable gun control. Mm-hmm. And if you put that into context within New Jersey, one of the largest and most powerful and also extremely well-respected unions, who's my stepmom's a nurse, a retired nurse, and it's like, if we can make their job any easier, it'll just help society because people get sick and they need healthcare. And here it is, them screaming for some sort of legislation to come through about gun control. And here is one of what, 13 or however few Congress members there are in New Jersey doesn't know that one of the state's largest and most respected unions is asking for legislation about their key issue.
And the chief of staff, and this is, takes out his Post-it notes and starts looking at our torch screen and scribbling down names of groups that aren't yet in their gun safety coalition, right? And this guy knows like all about New Jersey, all about advocacy. And so I think part of what Torch gets at is something when I was running the Second Chance campaign, a lot of campaigns do this advocacy campaign. You look for unlikely allies, right? You look for surprising validators. You look for groups
strange
that are-
Strange bedfellows.
Yeah, strange bedfellows. And I think just the logistical hardship right, with that right. is like the discovery piece. Like, how are you going to find, like I ran this criminal justice campaign. We always had this this dream scenario where we'd find enviros, you know, environmentalists that care about prisons or incarceration. We'd right. find developers and planning people. Right. The way that Torch helps solve that problem of siloing is that it searches instantaneously all issue areas, right? So this private prison example, the member of Congress was trying to outlaw federally private prisons. We typed in private prisons nationally, and we found two examples that we often share as this silo busting thing. We found that the Jewish women of Palm Beach County, Florida, not a group that you would just like intuitively associate with opposing private prisons, had just posted something opposing private prisons, right? That from an organizing perspective is like organizing gold potentially. When like a group like that who has money and resources and is not in your Rolodex says, we're in opposition. And then the other group, Vermont, with the vegans of Vermont were opposed to private prisons. And Torch has all of their communications, but also how to reach them, who they're following, all this stuff that you can just like put into your, yeah. you know, your
tool. And as a former vegan, I also love that story because once you hear it, it doesn't necessarily make sense at first. And it's not necessarily the first or 500th type of group that you go to. But once you think of their logic and their reasoning, they're a group that cares about animal welfare and they don't like putting animals, mammals, people, sentient beings in cages and mistreating them. And once you put all that together, it's like, oh, wow, let's expand our coalition about this dehumanizing treatment of privatizing and making for profit the prison industry. Let's bring them into our tent.
So I'm going to ask you a question now that I ask a lot of people that are doing nonpartisan or bipartisan work in the space. Mm-hmm. And you have to understand where I come from is having made software that I sold only to Democrats or progressive groups. Sure. And sometimes that created a fuss. And sometimes people in the early days thought that was an odd capitalist decision to limit your market. But you aren't doing that. And one consequence of that is that either side can take advantage of it. And you can have, you know, the NRA or a gun rights group both availing themselves of your services. And talk to me about like that decision in making a company and why you landed where you are.
Yes. Yeah, so I think I...
if I understand it sure. right, you are both collecting information across the line
the parties
and selling the resulting product to whoever wants to use it.
Well,
is that right?
Not quite. I mean, you know, Mike and I are the ultimate decision makers as to who we sign.
So if the Trump campaign comes to you to use this, then what do you do?
Probably not. I mean, I want to talk with Mike. It's certainly, you know,
we got $10 million here.
Certainly the NRA. Certainly. I mean, we've gotten this question.
Yeah.
Hate groups? Certainly not. We got an interesting question with a member of Congress that we're working with. We went to her retreat early on. We demoed Torch. They were like, this is cool. They signed up on the spot. And their lawyer, her chief counsel was like, off the record, she was like, so what if like police, this is like a spying tool. What if like police departments, what if the Newark Police Department wants to use it to like keep tabs on activists?
This is publicly available information that you're getting, right?
This is publicly available information,
but
what we've done is
we've
made it searchable.
Yes. And so you could easily isolate an individual and watch all their feeds and know a lot more about them.
Yeah, if they're in our database, if they're you know, if they serve on a board, and then we've, you know, and if they're
part of it. So how did you respond to that?
From the police department sense, we said no, we would not sell to a police department.
Police are on the right side of things, right?
Sure.
As opposed to the criminal side. These are tricky calls.
Yeah, these are tricky calls. One thing that we do feel very confident about is that we make judgment calls based upon our values and something from a practical perspective, from a business perspective. We have, you know, very deep roots. We do have deep, well, we're nonpartisan. We have roots in the Democratic Party. I mentioned earlier,
So Mitch McConnell comes to you to use this as a, I mean, he's a elected senator from a great state, and he's also, you know, an important politician in the Senate. Can he use your platform?
Yeah, so it's a great question. And so far, we've been fortunate at being able to kick the can down the road further and further.
That's not going
to
work for
long. And not yet make that decision. And
yeah.
I've had this conversation with a lot of people. And I've seen a couple different ways that people have taken it. Mm-hmm. Like one way is to remain a nonpartisan enterprise, which I think makes a lot of business sense, especially with a platform that's a searching tool, and it decomplicates things on the business front quite a bit, right? And you can always draw a line at hate or whatever. I've seen other people find where their bread is buttered. I'm thinking of like Voter Circle, which then doing well on the progressive side and the Democratic side moved from sort of nonpartisan to picking a side pretty early, at least at the high level. They kind of picked a camp. I suspect it's going to be hard to navigate it forever without going one direction or the other. And I think they're both legitimate business decisions.
Yep. It's a great question, Nathaniel, and it gets to like something really important. And one foundation that we were thinking about working with, we were actually excited to work with, very, very far to the left, progressive group wanted us to essentially sign like a loyalty oath.
You're going to get that sometimes with the DNC. We faced that with with my former company, NGP Van, where they wanted us to put into some document that even if we were bought down the road, that we you know, that's where we our DNA is, of course. But
we want to be able to do business in this sense. This is an extreme example. The dogma felt a little too heavy. Like, you know, like we felt like we would be signing like we can't do business with half of America, essentially, which didn't feel like the right move ideologically or from a business perspective.
One kind of follow-up on that is that you're, if I understand this right, were you funded partially by Higher Ground Labs?
Correct.
So Higher Ground, if I understand right, is a progressive funder. What are they doing funding a group that hasn't sorted this out?
I think that's a great question. We were clear with them early on when we were in conversations with them about, you know, we're nonpartisan. And in the same breath, I said to the, and Mike said this too, to the founders of Higher Ground Labs, my credentials and my values and, you know, working on the Obama campaign from day negative one and being an elected official in the Democratic Party, running the Second Chance campaign. Maybe it's a little naive, but a belief that Torch is a good values-driven company that's going to work with the quote-unquote good guys. And to date, we are. And I think there's more than enough business working for social justice.
I think the way that I think about it is that as we're early and we're young and our client base is small, it's nice to have it both ways, mostly focus with progressive and Democrat and Democrat-leaning organizations and say, oh, we're nonpartisan and oh, we're open. But I mean, as we grow and need to sort of delineate and choose, that's what I see as a good problem to have. And as we grow and demonstrate more value and the market is clearly leaning one way towards you have to choose a side, then I'm excited and looking forward to getting to that point in the business where we're so in demand and so many people see this value that they're saying, well, no, we want this exclusive side to it and we can position ourselves in the market as focused on we're a product and a search tool for Team Blue, then we'll get to that when we get to that.
I'm reacting to that as if it feels naive to me. You know, maybe I'm so far into one camp on that question that's
Yeah, and there's part of what we're building as scaffolding and as tooling, where I don't think anyone would expect Google Docs to create or Gmail to say we're only for Democrats or
we're only for Republicans.
Right,
but I think the more that it becomes of strategic value, the more that it becomes part, like, I have this name of a podcast, Great Battlefield, and I see two things, really. I see a very partisan world, which I am clearly on one side, but I also see great Americans across a spectrum and enterprises that I want to support, some of which are nonpartisan, some of which are just working to better the democracy. I think it's just helpful to think that through and see where you want to place yourself. And at some not too distant point, you probably are going to have to.
I think that's a fair characterization of our perspective on it, both that we are, or maybe me in particular, as someone from the physics world and the ad tech world, that I'm naive, and it's something that
we see this very commonly with technical folks, Silicon Valley folks who come into the political world, and that's not where you're from, but it's the same kind of, boy, it's fierce out there, and there's a lot of politics in politics, and you start to get buffeted by it a bit. And it is what it is.
And I will say that this is telegraphing into the future a bit, but I think one of the magical powers of Torch, I think it makes it unique, is being able to find allies that you wouldn't intuitively think about as being allies. And I think that groups on the right, for example, would be able to use Torch in pro-social ways to find conversations to be like, I didn't know that crazy lefty was actually using the same language that I am. And maybe we could find common cause, ground.
I think one could come up with a quite reasonable rationalization for either business choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Everyone is looking for... If you make pottery, you're looking for more people to find your Instagram page. Every business, every nonprofit, everyone wants eyeballs. Everyone wants information about who might be interested. Could I use your tool for that, or is that not a good fit?
Yeah, and what we found, especially on the online advertising side, one of our foundation clients has been using Torch to supplement their own promotion. And another group is actually a corporate group has a podcast series that they're coming out with in the near future. Part of it is on global warming and part of it is on plastics in the ocean. And what we did with them is build influencer search results for them focused on here are the leaders, both board members, even elected officials and nonprofits on this particular issue. And so what they do is sort of threefold ways of using Torch. And one is actually reaching out to those influencers. And then a second way is actually boosting, say you tweet out an episode link and it's an episode about plastics in the ocean, taking the key influencers that we've identified with really niche followers. And when you go to boost that post, boosting it to the followers of these influencers. And then thirdly, using Torch to develop your own thought leadership around this particular issue. And one feature within Torch that we've talked a lot internally about building it, giving it more of a highlight and possibly building a specific product around it, it's labeled within Torch as the most shared content from this search. And so taking those results that are New York Times articles that are being shared, NPR articles, et cetera, and using that as content for your own social media feeds.
Okay. Why did you call it Torch? Because it's illuminating a space?
I mean, that's the general, glad you got the analogy. That's the general idea, is that it's illuminating a space that we feel has been too dark, too disparate and fragmented, the quote-unquote social sector. And yes, wanting to shed light on potential allies, on thought leaders, on, groups that how do I find them? Torch at the end of the day is a discovery tool and then also an engagement tool because we have all of their comms. So you can quickly be like, yeah, they're in my camp or they're against me. and their contact info.
So tell me about how Torch is doing as a business. Mm-hmm. So how many employees are you up to? How many clients are you up to? What's the trend currently? Mm-hmm.
It's positive. You know, I would say that the way we think of ourselves is we are a company that's very thoughtful in how we're scaling. We're actually trying to provide value and learn from, we have a couple dozen clients now spread across nonprofits, politics, and then also sort of more advocacy oriented groups.
I had an employee who used to say, if you have a product and three clients, you have a business.
Yeah.
So you're past that stage.
Yeah, we're past that.
And you're getting feedback.
We're getting tons of feedback.
And how many people working with you?
So Mike and I are the only, what are the two full timers? And we have a crew of seven that really are part of the team, have been with us for 2 years now. So a couple of dev people, two client facing people, client engagement folks, a UX UI designer. Am I leaving anybody else out?
Our new PR person.
Our new PR person, yeah.
So you're going to try to do some marketing now. You're trying to get known a little bit.
Exactly.
Can you use your own tools to great effect in that? Are you?
Yeah, we can. I don't think we've done that yet, but I think that's, sometimes you ignore like your beautiful backyard.
Shoemaker's children, so to speak. We're really focused on our client needs and our client goals. And as we're launching some partnerships and building out some more public facing tools and investing the time to get ourselves out there and to do more PR, that's where we're going to start ramping it up and really do that dog fooding that'll get us out.
But
there.
And I think just to your very good question, how are you doing it as a business? We feel good because, you know, we're approaching break even, which is excellent on where we are now. We have big ambitions to grow and we want Torch to be like a verb that's in common parlance that, like, you know, if you're at a nonprofit or a foundation or a campaign, you're like, well, just torch that. Like, what do the conversations look like?
It sounds like burn it up, but yeah.
Yeah. It's a slightly aggressive metaphor. I think we slightly embrace that as well. Like the burning thing. I was always into fire as a kid. Maybe that's part of it. Still am with fireworks.
Yeah, me too. One of the things that I'm interested in, and you may know I have a different company that does some work with data visualization, is how do you take information like that you've collected and present it in a way visually that redounds to the benefit of the consumer of that information? What do you have yet, or what are you planning to have in your tool that helps people see the space that they're navigating?
When I hear that question, I think sort of as two moving parts of that. And one part first is taking information or letting the user enter in information that lets them define a query. So we have 2 million organizations whose 4 or 5 different social media feeds are coming through our platform. Mm-hmm. And then showing the data back to the user, we have half a dozen or so different ways of filtering that data. So you type in your keyword, you say, I want to see data from just the last 90 days, from the last 2 years. And then we show first
like different report formats.
Yeah. So we've built a lot of those out. So there's a summary, there's a dashboard view where we show you how many results there are, what social platforms are leading that result, the top hashtags, some of the top shared content. And then for each of those types of results, you can dig in. We have displaying the data we call Coalition Builder. So if you type in a search and there's 20,000 social media posts that are returned, that might be across 3,000 or 5,000 organizations, or you can filter it in more narrowly. And maybe within the city on this particular issue, there's a dozen different organizations. And over the last 2 years, they've made hundreds of posts, so we can show you here's information about each of those dozen. Here's their name, here's their mission statement, and alongside that are a way of scrolling a carousel through their posts. Separately, we can show you the top hashtags across all those different posts, the top articles that are being shared. You can view those posts and order them and filter them by how many followers they have, how many likes they have.
And I think just from a data viz perspective, and this would interest you, I read about your work, which is amazing. Three of our favorites are when you do any search, say it's bail reform, which is a hot topic, or environmental, plastic, straws, you can quickly see where the energy is. Like, there's a map of the United States. So you'd be like, oh, only the coasts care about this stuff. Nobody else in the middle cares. So there's the visual of the U.S. There's also activity spikes across our platform. So like, oh, last week, you know, somebody mentioned it, and apparently, and everybody's talking about plastic bags. And thirdly, there's word clouds too, so you can see what sort of the corollary messaging.
That's what is I was. Around. That's what I was aiming at.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
So you both have been kind of in entrepreneurial ventures before, in different regards. What have you learned about entrepreneurship in the political space that you can share with other people that might be interested?
There's kind of two aspects to that question. There's what do you know about entrepreneurship, and what's specific about the political space?
The challenge of, and I've worked on campaigns and been inside of it, and you know, your bandwidth is limited. There's always, you know, your hair is always on fire. There's always some problem, right? It's sometimes, you know, working as an entrepreneur within politics and getting people to stop for a second to use a new tool that could be really helpful to them when they're focused on like the latest crisis or the enemy or whatever.
It's definitely hard. Yeah, it's hard to break through.
It can be challenging. But, you know, one early win we had was with a governor who was running for office at the time, around the time the immigration ban came out, right? And this gave us hope with politics in general. If you can make your point quickly and succinctly when they need it, you can get in their flow. This guy was running for governor. He knew he wanted to oppose the immigration ban, Trump's immigration ban, but they hadn't quite figured out how courageously they wanted to oppose it. How much backbone would they have? Where would they be? We did a quick torch search of an entire state, and we found all these super middle-of-the-road moderate groups within hours were opposing the ban. The United Way, the trustees of Princeton University, the YMCA.
So is this Phil Murphy then?
Yes, correct. And we gave courage to the Murphy campaign that they said, oh, like, wow, they're like actively opposing the ban. A, we should bring them into our camp because they're super credible. And B, we're going to tack left and be super courageous.
They gave him a chance to have some backbone.
Exactly.
Because he knew he was in his state. He was in good shape.
Totally. He was in good shape. And these are influencers. So finding, as an entrepreneur, finding those moments and campaigns where you can latch, I think is really important because, you know, it moves fast and it's constantly changing. And if you're not helping them in the moment, it's like, get out of my face.
And I think one other quick thought, and coming, say, from the ad tech space and now in politics and activism, is that there's almost surprise that we've built an enterprise tool that treats these professional activists, politicians, nonprofit executives in a professional way. And there's almost a lack of tooling, say, for foundations, for nonprofits, for politics, compared to working in ad tech where anyone's inbox is constantly being bombarded with multiple different startups and new technologies.
Where's my dashboard? You know, I've often said that, like in the nonprofit sector, it's like, I should have like a, you know, my dad was in finance and he always had his little Bloomberg thing you go to and he'd type in, but like, where's mine?
Have you guys thought about, one of the things people say when you're starting a company is you should have an exit strategy in mind. And you know, what might be a good home for this company? Should I create a lot of value here? Have you thought about that at all? Was that?
We try not to spend too much time daydreaming on that as that can get distracting really quickly. But sure, when you look at the space, there are a few publicly traded companies that are specifically focused on nonprofits. And then when you look at the
like
social
Blackbaud
media listening
bought
space,
Attentively, for which example, I mentioned earlier. Right.
That's a good example.
Yeah.
That's one where you like go to Google Finance and look at their market
cap. Salesforce has a nonprofit, wing. Google does some cool stuff with nonprofits. Yeah.
And then the social media companies themselves.
Yep. This is sort of a little fanciful, but a guy who I was talking with who's big in Democratic politics and kind of like he organizes donors and he's been around. Anyway, I sat down with him, did a demo for him on Torch a couple years ago on my phone. He only had 10 minutes. He's super busy. And he was like, this is great. Like, this is all great knowledge. Like, this should be free for everybody, for every activist, for every nonprofit. This is a source. And we're like, yeah, we'd love to get there. And so
Google could make that happen.
Google yeah. could. Another yeah. example that we've used was that Mark Zuckerberg or Chan Zuckerberg bought this database of scientific research, whose name escapes me, I don't remember the name of it, for an undisclosed sum. And millions, I'm sure, and made the platform free for scientific researchers so they could, that would be a good outcome that we'd be happy about. Like, we would love for this to be a source of knowledge because it's about public life. It's about the social sector.
That's interesting. Is there a question that I failed to ask that you wish I had?
I don't think so. The only thing that I like to try to keep things really like simple and big picture. And I think what we're most excited and proud about with Torch is that it's letting you do something that you currently, a search, a discovery that you cannot do using like publicly available tools. My brother-in-law runs a bail reform campaign for the ACLU, and he's been on the cover of the New York Times. He's like a big bail reform leader. We were talking about Torch. He was like, what is this Torch thing? And I said, well, let's search your issue. And he knows a lot of people in the Northeast and in California and Michigan. I said, well, why don't we geolocate to the 14 Southern states and type in bail reform? We're going to find a whole bunch of new allies for you as we're sitting here at the bar. And we did. And he was like, yeah, I have now have 280 groups that care about bail reform and that I didn't know. And like, now I'm going to give this to my organizer. Like those like big picture things.
It's such a damn big country.
It's a damn big country. It's huge. And we've sometimes said Torch is a tool for people who realize it's a big world out there. If you feel like, if you're the kind of person who feels like you know everybody you need to know, then we're not the tool for you. But if you feel like there's a lot more supporters and knowledge I could bring in, then Torch is a tool for you because it's a big world.
Very cool.
Yeah, that's great.
It's been an honor to have you guys here today. Anything else you want to say?
Thank you for having
yeah,
us.
Yeah, thank you for having us. And do you want to, like, the Torch grant program thing? We're trying to, like...
Sure, yeah, yeah, that's a good thing to
and
mention.
And we can even motivate it where it's, like, some nonprofits own a budget, and we're trying to...
Yep. We are a mission-driven for-profit company, and we have a subscription model. We're also launching a new, essentially, Torch for free. It's called Torch Grants Program. You have to apply to be in it for nonprofits that have small budgets and would, you know, love to have these capabilities, but don't have the budgets to do it. You can apply to us to get free use of our platform, all the bells and whistles. What we ask in response is that if you love something about the platform, tell us. If you don't love something, tell us. So getting a little feedback along the way, we're just rolling that out now. And cool. And we're proud of that.
Will you take all comers that apply for that? Or what will be the criteria on which you decide?
There's a little bit of bandwidth issues for us. We're thinking starting...
Because it's costly to actually put someone on it.
And also we want to get and a support. Personal relationship yeah. with them and mm-hmm. understand both support them as they use the platform and also get feedback from them and incorporate that into the platform and make it better in the future.
Makes sense. Cool. All right. Well, I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Likewise. Thank you, Nathaniel.
So that was Rick Greenberg and Mike Seiler with Torch. They're at torch1.com. Will Rick and Mike turn Torch into a widely used platform? I'm very interested to see. This is Nathaniel G. Perlman with the Great Battlefield Podcast. You can find us at resistance-board.com or by searching for Great Battlefield in places where podcasts are found.